fours can really get into their emotions almost to the place where it's fantasy. It's not even real. And books and knowledge can ground you, you know, and bring you back to what's actually true and real. Now, obviously, you can swing the other way, right? You know, having too much knowledge and relying too much and not being able to do. But I can see how, from a very healthy standpoint, when the four gets too much outside themselves or too into their emotions, that logic, that reasoning can bring them back. Hey everyone, this is Beth.
And I'm Jeff.
And this is your Enneagram Coach, the podcast, where we're here to help you to see yourselves with astonishing clarity so that you can break free from self-condemnation, fear, and shame by knowing and experiencing the unconditional love, forgiveness, and freedom in Christ. Well, we're on YouTube, so head over there, watch this, like and subscribe so you don't miss any of the new content that we're releasing.
Well, today we're going to be talking about type fours and their two wings, which are type 3 and type 5. If the concepts of wings for the Enneagram are new to you, head over to episode 160, where we do a thorough explanation of what the wings are in more detail. Essentially, the wings are the two types directly next to your main type on the Enneagram symbol. So there's no way that you're going to be a 4 with a 9 wing or a 4 with a 6 wing. You're only going to be 4 with both of the wings of the 5 and the 3. So as a type 6, 5 and 7 are my wings. And for Bethy here, she's a 9 with a 8 wing and a 1 wing, both of which I'm very familiar with.
Yes, you are. Yeah. So today's episode, again, we're going to be talking about our type 4s and their 3 and 5 wings. But don't forget that the driving force behind their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors predominantly come from the core motivations of the type 4. And the core motivations, again, are the core fear, desire, weakness, and longing. And that is going to be how they see the world, how they interpret the world, and then how they react to the world based on those core motivations. Now, their wings are going to try to influence their main type because their wings are parts of them that have their own core motivations. And so that means they have their own core fears, desires, weakness, and longing. And that means that they see the world, interpret it, and want to react to it in their own way. So it's trying so hard to go, hey, for today's episode, type 4, hey, type 4, I think you aren't seeing it right. You need to see it this way. You need to react to it this way. So we're going to be explaining how these wings really try to impact and influence the main type.
What may be surprising is that the reality is that we have relationships with these wings in our life, and they play a significant role in our lives. But maybe referring to wings as parts of us, which we discuss a lot in our new book, More Than Your Number, maybe that sounds a little bit weird to you. But the reality is that we actually use this kind of vocabulary all the time, and especially when it comes to wings. Because you may feel both, like, hey, I want to do this, but I also want to do this. Or I like this, but I also like this. Or maybe even the negative and positive, where, yeah, I really feel bad about that, but then I also feel this other kind of healthy way about it. It's all mixed in, and wings kind of draw that out of who we are in all of the variances that make up an Enneagram type. As we often say on our platform, each Enneagram type is like a color at Sherwin-Williams. You may be looking for blue, but guess what? There's a thousand different blues.
Yeah.
And these parts of us showing up in that particular way mm-hmm. really emphasize that point.
Well, that's right, Jeff. And before we introduce our guest, I want to just paint a picture of what the type 4, the introspective individualist, is like. They're authentic, they're creative, expressive, deep. They can be temperamental, but they also have imaginations and exude emotions and feelings. See, the type 4s are very unique. They're authentic. They have a lot of depth to their emotions. They're definitely not going to be surface. And for the fours, they really can see beauty all around them. They embrace a wide range of emotions and really can see what is happening around them. They're very intuitive. They bring a profound understanding to despair and suffering. And they are so brave and able to sit in the midst of a lot of sorrow and grief and to hear from people and what they're experiencing. Because, you know, there's some types out there that are just like, let's move on, just be positive, like this is too uncomfortable. But our fours really excel at being there for people right where they need you to be, and listen for as long as the person needs to talk. Now, when you're with a type four, you're going to feel that genuine sense of listening and understanding and actually being there for you. Now, the other thing about type fours is deep down, the place that they're going to struggle is they have this idealized version of themselves. Someone that is very socially adept, attuned to, able to bring out the most beauty and authenticity of who they really are. But because they see around them that they don't have that, they feel that they're defective and flawed in some way. And so when they start to feel that they're defective and flawed, you're going to see them pull back, to withdraw, to be more self-absorbed, maybe temperamental, and really feeling that they don't have as much to offer the world because this idealized version of themselves isn't being brought to the surface and isn't there. Now, this really comes from those core motivations. So the type four's core fear is being inadequate, emotionally cut off, plain, mundane, defective, flawed, and insignificant. But they desire to be unique, special, and their most authentic self. But they struggle with the core weakness of envy. Now, what this means here in the Enneagram is that they feel tragically flawed and something foundational is missing inside them. But when they look around, they feel like everyone else possesses these qualities that they're lacking, which then creates that envy. Now, their core longing, or the message their heart longs to hear, is to hear you are seen and loved for exactly who you are, special and unique.
Bethy, you've, on this series on podcasts, you've gone through each of the types. It is interesting to hear how you as a nine describe the types, not in the words, but how you enunciate the words for a four. What is it you're trying to get across about a four?
Yeah, you know, when I think of fours, I'm very careful to do my very best to describe the four from how they really feel, mm-hmm. and their experiences, because they're so often misunderstood. And even as a nine, and I see all nine perspectives, I hold the position that I don't really know and I don't really understand, but I'm going to do the best I can. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always looking to the fours to make sure that what I'm saying matches up with their experience. Now, each of the type fours are going to be different and unique in their own mm-hmm. right. So I'm never going to hit it perfectly, but I always want to just be sure that they feel well understood and heard and represented. And so probably the way that you're hearing me talk is to emphasize things that I've heard mean the most to them.
So, I mean, right before this episode, we had just recorded with some type sevens, mm-hmm. and you were bubbly, you're right. Smiling, when we're eights, you're much more direct, you're not holding back anything. You're
just true nine, I am blending and merging with the type.
No, even whatever you're talking about, that's so fun.
No, yeah, when I think of the fours, I think of this deep, rich, beautiful soul. Mm-hmm. That is almost like sitting next to water and reflecting and allowing the emotions of the beauty around them to just envelop them, and wanting those feelings to also envelop everyone around them.
Yeah.
No matter what those emotions are. It doesn't have to be like with the sevens, positive. It's any of the emotions. Like just allow what's there to be true. And so that's what I'm envisioning
awesome.
Right
now. I was experiencing it just listening to you go through an explanation of the type. So that's really awesome. Well, our guests today are Madeline Mace and Dr. Mikael Harris. So Madeline, welcome to the podcast. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. Wow. I feel like Beth described so much of what my inner soul, yes, longs to hear. To say much more about myself, I don't know. You kind of covered the deepest aspects that doesn't normally get attributed, I think, outside of talking about the Enneagram. So, I mean, I really appreciate that. But a little bit about me, I'm a student. I'm in my second quarter of school for marriage and family therapy. I'm doing a dual master's in, my second is in religion and society. And so I have a lot of homework because of that. And I'm also interning currently at the Behavioral Medical Center with adolescents. And so there's a lot of crisis that I work with, and people ask me how I love it or how I like it. And people don't actually think that I'm going to say I do really deeply enjoy working with these kids who are in crisis, because I can handle that that seriousness, that depth of crisis and pain. And I feel like that's where I feel most comfortable, which is actually sounds really odd to some people. But other than that, I'm a sculpture artist. As you can see, I'm kind of in my studio at the moment. What you're seeing is my bedroom portion, but the rest of my desk is my art studio space. I wear a few different hats, but at this moment, I'm a student.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Great.
I remember the first time I ran into a double major at the University of Kansas. I'm like, what? Why would you do that?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get out of one.
Yeah.
Well, but Dr. Harris, you have beat us all here, and you've just, you've got all kinds of degrees. But, welcome to the podcast. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you. This is sort of a wow moment. I'm so excited to see you all together live. I feel like I'm almost fangirling a little bit. So thank you all for creating space.
Usually there's a Mike Wojciechowski over my face because usually everybody just wants to talk to Beth.
But that's true.
Every live event.
Inc, you know, and every time Mike Wazowski's like, look at me, and he has like a big thing around his head, like you can't see him. which is actually really funny and humorous. Being the nine, it's like, oh, that's great. People do want to hear from me.
Yes.
Anyway, thank you for being here.
Yeah. No, I loved your visual of sort of sitting by that body of water and just allowing those waves to envelop you and that hope that others around. When you said that, I instantly got a person in mind, and I thought, wow, there's that tension point that I think does come up for me a lot. But I work as a licensed psychologist, and I specialize in grief and loss. So I was also resonating when you said that we, you know, have the capacity to sit in the depth of hard moments and seasons with people. Like Madeline, that's my comfort zone. I can sit in that. I can walk in that and help support people who aren't coping with various types of loss. And it's just been really beautiful to have that as a niche. Yeah. I say that it's not a sexy niche, but it's a necessary one. So I'm glad to be able to, do it.
Sure.
Very necessary. Yeah. And that's what, you know, I love about the body of Christ, right? I mean, God created us differently to handle different things. And sometimes he does call us to things that are harder for us. I mean, there are going to be some types, you know, there are therapists that work, that are type sevens that work with grief as well. They're going to do it very differently. But that's also going to be in some sense, a strain. It's going to be harder for them to sit in those more uncomfortable moments, but it doesn't mean they can't do it. But you guys really are the bodybuilders or the heavy lifters of grief, sorrow, sadness, deep emotions. And it could be even high emotions too. It's not always the darker emotions, but you guys really are the bodybuilders that can withstand a lot of exertion and weight and depth and intensity, really, in the sphere that some of us would be uncomfortable. And so for that, we're very, very grateful, because it is absolutely a space that's needed.
And thank you for calling us bodybuilders. No one's ever called me that. I'm going to own that.
Yes. Yeah.
That's so funny. How awesome is that? Well, it's common for people to talk about their dominant wing, which, although there is certainly some truth to it, the reality is that we function out of both of our wings, and both wings can actually show up in healthy and unhealthy ways. Mm-hmm. Today, we're going to be talking about the type four wings, because it's important to recognize and be aware of when these parts of us show up. So for the type four, that's type three and also type five. Now, one may be less dominant than the other, but it's still there playing a role in your life.
Yeah. All right. So then let's jump into your wing five, and let's kind of just paint a picture of what the Wing 5 is. So why does the Type 5 do what it does? And again, this is going to be based off those core motivations. Your 5 Wing's core fear is the fear of being annihilated, invaded, thought of as incapable or ignorant, having obligations placed on it, and really the fear of energy depletion or the depletion of their resources. But the desire for the 5 is to be knowledgeable, capable, and competent. So what you'll notice with this Wing 5 is a part of you that wants to withdraw. It wants to be wise. It's also very innovative and an observer of all things. It's very curious and craving to learn more and more. But it fears that it lacks inner resources and that too much interaction with others is going to lead to some sort of catastrophic depletion of their energy or emotional reserves. And when it starts to feel that, it really feels this need to put up some boundaries and to withdraw from others and need its own space to recharge. Now, the Type 5 Wing will increase the 4's creativity from this intellectual viewpoint, because 5s can really take this knowledge, and the 4 is going to be able to take the knowledge and go pretty far with it with this creativity spin. So you can conceptualize new ways of seeing things, new viewpoints, and bringing so much more value to the world when you're actually incorporating not just the intellect, but the emotions as well. So I would love to hear from you guys. How does your Type 5 from a healthy viewpoint show up, and how does that contribute and help your Type 4?
So for me, the healthy aspects, I would say, similar to what you said, about, you know, craving knowledge, craving, wanting to observe, and just, so I feel like a sponge often. I feel like I just want to, growing up, I thought I was so different because all my peers were out playing and I just wanted to sit at the adult table and listen to whatever they had to say, because I associated that with knowledge. I associated that with like something I didn't understand. Okay, what are you talking about? Politics? What? Like, what is that? Or what are you talking about? Religion? What are you talking about here in this social experiences or social justice or all of these different aspects? I was like, what do you have to say? What's your perspective? How can I glean? And that has truly impacted how I do my artwork, how I process. I think it's influenced my worldview, but sometimes I think I am too scared to form a worldview sometimes, because I'm like, wait, but I might have missed something. I might not have learned enough to formulate a well-rounded perspective. So I think there's pros and cons to that, because I'm constantly wanting to learn more. But sometimes I'm like, well, is it enough for me to form my own stance on certain large, certain, say, controversial topics?
I'm just curious, because with your artwork, do you just jump in and like do something, or do you sit and conceptualize, or do you bring in some information, or what is your process with art, and maybe where does the 5 show up?
Ooh, love this question. So often I was curious about why I felt like, okay, I don't have just I don't have an imagination like some of my other friends did. And when I got my fine art degree in college, some of my friends were just like, things were just in their head, just like random inspiration, at least seemingly more random inspiration. But I felt like I had to respond to something. So any sort of information or something that like an idea that I've heard about, okay, like how am I going to collaborate with that idea and respond to it rather than come up with something, a design that's just out of, technically, I do believe all art is a response. However, there are those who just have wild imaginations that are, that just kind of come from many places. For me, I feel very narrow. I feel like, okay, so for instance, this saw behind me, I saw this saw. Okay, how am I going to respond to it? And I feel like I intellectualize the mundane, and then I respond to it visually. And then I feel like I form the meaning out of it along the way, or after the product is done. And I kind of just, I just sit in my thoughts a bit and I'm like, what is this? What is it telling me? What could it mean? What does it tell the viewer? What's the first impression they have about it? So I think I get in my head a lot in my work. Sometimes I don't begin until I feel like the inspiration is there, or I feel the need to respond to an object. So, yeah, I'm very in my head about it.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Cause like even just seeing the saw behind you, it says to me a lot of thought went into it. Yeah, just a lot of thought, intentionality. And so you know that there's a story that goes with it, that it has a lot of meaning. And so that's why I was kind of curious, like, you know, because that five is bringing out that curiosity and observing. So you're observing the saw and you're, but the four is also bringing the story and the depth and the, a more creative, heartfelt bent to it. So anyway, that's why I kind of went with that question. So, well, Dr. Harris, what about you? What does it look like for the healthy five to show up, you know, in your world?
So I think that because I sort of land in that very depth, emotion laden place. And so what the five sometimes does is sort of pull me away from that into more of a, retreating to investigate not only externally, but internally, which has really been powerful. There was something, Jeff, that you said, I think it was on a podcast, and you were talking about how sometimes you noticed that you're a collector of books, but the motivation for getting the books, I can't recall the specifics, but I remember that really resonating with me. And I went back and thought, well, gosh, I have purchased a lot of self-development, personal development books. What is that about? And I think it's occurred in moments where I felt the most emotionally overwhelmed, where I'm sort of seeking, you know, that information, which has been great to draw me out of just the emotion of it all. Of course, I have too many books in the house, and that's a different story. but I think it's served a really healthy purpose to that end, for sure.
Yeah,
sure. You know, it's interesting you say that, Dr. Harris, because I had the privilege of working with a type four. He was a lead pastor. And I hearing you describe it that way, I remember there were seasons of my experience with him and his leadership that if he got too disorganized internally, he would look for these very practical ways to kind of almost put his life back together because he felt like he's losing grasp on things.
Almost like an anchor.
Right. It anchored him. It kind of brought him back like, okay, I've gone to that place long enough. I got to get back into reality.
Well, and I think that like, as I'm picturing it, because, you know, the fours can really get into their emotions almost to the place where it's fantasy. It's not even real. And books and knowledge can ground you, you know, and bring you back to what's actually true and real. Now, obviously, you can swing the other way, right? You know, having too much knowledge and relying too much and not being able to do. But I can see how, from a very healthy standpoint, when the four gets too much outside themselves or too into their emotions, that logic, that reasoning can bring them back.
Absolutely. Well, why don't we talk about the other part of the five part of our hearts, that all the parts of our heart can show up in healthy and unhealthy ways. As we talk about the five wings, particularly the unhealthy characteristics, it's important to keep in mind that this part of us actually has good intentions and is actually trying to help. Even though it may be misaligned in its methods, it's really trying to help and protect. And because of the five wings, also with the withdrawn type, it can make you perhaps feel even extra withdrawn or unable to move forward in life. It believes that you must use your intellect to sort through emotions, which can make your thoughts and feelings feel more accurate and cause you to react to life and people from a false reality. It can also make you more secretive because you feel like others don't understand your need for privacy and don't appreciate how you process information and emotions. All of this can increase the feeling that you are defective. Your five wing can also bring up feelings of arrogance. So when you notice you're feeling superior to others because of your uniqueness, perhaps your unhealthy five wing may be activated to counteract your feelings of feeling defective. Type four struggles with low self-confidence, but elevating yourself above others is a defensive mechanism that only increases your problems. Self-confidence doesn't place you above others. Instead, it sees your inherent value and puts everyone on the same level, including yourself. So, Dr. Harris, why don't we start with you for this first one is, how do you see your five wings showing up in an unhealthy way?
We'll be back after a quick break. Moms, I am so excited to share with you a huge and wonderful opportunity that we have created for you this summer. It's our Enneagram for Moms cohorts. Yes, a group of moms of your same Enneagram type coming together for a safe place to connect, share, and hear and be validated. Wouldn't that be amazing to be with other moms of your same Enneagram type who see the world through the same lens and truly understand you? It's going to be amazing. But here's the thing. There are only 25 spots per cohort. We have one in the daytime and one in the evening of your type to choose from. But you're going to want to sign up the day it opens. We open registration May 6th to May 13th. Now, these groups will kick off the week of June 10th, and they will go until the week of July 29th. That's 8 weeks together for 90 minutes, sharing, laughing, crying, being together in that safe, intimate place to connect with moms, to develop deep, meaningful friendships. And there's so many other things that are going to come with the cohort. I hope that you will join us and learn more when you sign up on May 6th to May 13th at yourenneagramcoach.com/cohorts. I can't wait to see you there.
Yeah, so I was sort of lighting up inside as you were saying certain things, and I can definitely see how acquiring knowledge and sort of separating myself in a way to be unique has definitely, in some certain cases, manifested as, well, she just thinks she has it going on, right? Not necessarily only other people's perceptions, but even my own. And I think that is sort of a compensation for sometimes feeling that sense of inadequacy. So I had to really be careful about acquiring more knowledge. Like I've really, especially in the past 4 to 5 years, stopped and asked, why am I pursuing this? As I'm seeking, you know, maybe another certification or another thing or whatever. It's sort of stopping to ask, what purpose is this going to serve? And sometimes it does serve a purpose. Sometimes it's, I think, wanting to fill that gap of, okay, I just have all this information to sort of feel better about these harder parts and these tougher parts of myself. So that's how it's shown up in my world for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Madeline, what about you?
Wow, I relate to much of what you guys said. For me, I think how the five negatively shows up for me is I get emotional and mental paralysis. I feel like I'm locked inside of my head and my body when I am in, when something happens that I feel emotionally flooded. And I often feel like I can't physically move because I'm in my head. And it's amazing how the emotions and your mind can influence how your body reacts. Because in my relationship, there are times when if there's an argument or something that's particularly emotionally triggering, and I get that flooding of feelings and then I'm in my head about it, I am paralyzed. I feel physically paralyzed because I have to get out of my head and back into my body. And yeah, it's an interesting experience.
Do you find anything particular that kind of helps break that?
Well, that's a great question. I think while I've been in therapy and also in school for marriage and family therapy, but I am in my own personal therapy, I've learned a lot about grounding techniques, and those have been, you know, sometimes people might be like, that silly breathing, what, like, you know, those breathing exercises, or standing up against a wall and just feeling the firmness of the solid wall behind you. these are very small things, but these are things that my body does react well to, because my senses are now reactivated, and kind of I'm getting back into my body and outside of my head. And this is actually, and Dr. Harris can confirm this and say more about what trauma survivors have experienced and how people react to that. Let's say PTSD, you know, getting out of that experience and back into your body, into the moment. And my therapist has shared that, you know, this emotional flooding, getting out, I tend to have to do those experiences because these feelings are so real. And in the mind, in these thoughts, in these, you know, mental flooding, it's just very real.
Well, I even had that this morning. I was having a really rough time, and I told Jeff, I'm like, I'm not really sure exactly. I couldn't, you know, as a nine, you know, I'm like, I can't pinpoint exactly why I'm feeling this way, but I'm just not doing good. He's like, why don't you go for a walk, you know? And so I did, and I felt so much better afterwards. You know, just that physical activity was so helpful. I'm sorry, Dr. Harris, you were
just want to make sure that you understand in this moment that
yes, you were right.
Yeah, great. I don't think I heard that as confidently as I was hoping, but I'm joking.
You were right. It was helpful.
But it was the way that you explained it, though. It's like, I don't know what's happened. I just feel sad, like I want to cry. Mm-hmm. And it was like, hey, everything around you is fine. And just let it run through your body. And you can take a walk. You can do what, there's a number of different things that help you to kind of get back into where you're at, into reality. And so today it happened to be walking, and I'm glad it was a helpful exercise for you.
Yep.
Dr. Harris?
No, I was just going to add, Madeline, what you were saying about this almost like a physical paralysis. I really noticed the same thing. I notice it so much in my throat, especially when, you know, for example, if my fiance and I argue, or there's something, my dad died in 2020. And so I feel like in some ways I've been sort of walking around cramped, and I'll notice that I'm holding my breath. And so what's been interesting, like one of the tools that I've used is my Apple Watch, to be honest, which will remind me like, oh, you need to breathe. And then it's sort of like this reminder of, ooh, I need to release and do what you're talking about with a grounding exercise, to come back and really free up that knot that happens to fall in my throat often. So,
wow.
Now, there are a lot of funny things that come along with being an Enneagram type. Mm-hmm. But to hear you say, like, your watch reminds you, like, you're not breathing.
Yeah, that's...
Mine says your heart is beating really fast right now.
Wow. Yeah.
The six.
What does yours say, Beth?
Mine says, stand up.
Oh, this is funny. You all can do an Apple Watch series.
I wonder. So if you're listening to this podcast, put it in the comments. What is your most frequent Apple Watch alert according to your type? And I wonder. I don't know.
Well, it's funny that you guys say that, because I'm like, yeah, it just keeps telling me to stand up. And I'm like, I'm busy. I don't want to stand up.
That is so funny.
Yeah. I'm cozy. I'm comfortable.
I need to get an Apple Watch is what I'm hearing.
Well, of course you do now. That's right. The fun that you can
have.
That
would be fun. If Apple.
Exactly. It would be fun if the Apple Watch had like Enneagram alert systems, like you're too much in your head you know, like you're type 9.
That.
I know, right? Like type 9, you need to like take a moment and you need to, you know, really think about what's going on now inside you. Like, are you merging with someone?
Yeah, there is a mindfulness part of the watch, I think, in the health app.
I'm
really curious.
Now we're going to have to make
if there's
Apple
some
Watch
trends
app.
From Apple Watches.
Yeah.
That's yes. right.
That's you need fine. To make an app. An app with affirmations, reminders.
Any a
watch. Any a watch.
Well, if you're interested in learning more about the Enneagram, head on over to yourenneagramcoach.com. You'll find everything you need to know there. And if you're ready to take the next step with maybe perhaps personalized Enneagram coaching, be sure to check out our incredible certified coaches at myenneagramcoach.com.
And that's where you guys can find Dr. Harris and Madeline Mace. So myenneagramcoach.com is where all of our certified coaches are. So you can kind of see what they offer there as well.
Sounds good.
And if for those of you who are like us and who love coaching others, paying it forward, seeing the ripple effect in people's lives through Enneagram Coaching, then check out our certification program at yourenneagramcoach.com/BEC. And our team would love to help, you know, give you information or help you to know how to accelerate transformation in other people's lives. But always remember that the Enneagram reveals your need for Jesus, not your need to work harder, because it's the gospel that transforms us. Thank you so much for tuning in today. The next episode, we'll dive into type fives and their wings. We'll see you then.